Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 10. Dave, the big preseason game is always Week 3 now, the way things are set up. The Steelers will have their Week 4 game in Carolina on Thursday, and we wouldn't expect the starters to take more than a couple snaps in that game. But this is the game, 7:30 at Heinz Field against the Atlanta Falcons. A couple interesting things are, just in terms of big topics, the Steelers are going to have their starters go at least a half. And I think it's nice that they're playing a quality opponent, and probably even nicer that they're playing a quality opponent from the NFC.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. You know, we kind of touched briefly on this on the last podcast that the Falcons, I'm excited because the Falcons are a quality opponent. In the fact that, I mean, we saw what Roddy White did last year, although he never broke off the big play in the Week 1 game. He had a hell of a lot of catches and was targeted a lot of times in that game. And the Falcons, I think, really suffered from not really having a good number two receiver. And, of course, now they've got the rookie, you know, to go along with Roddy White. So, and I think Matt Ryan's one of the better quarterbacks in the NFC, and I expect him to be even better this year. So I expect them to throw, and I expect them to really test the Steelers secondary this week. And, you know, they have a four-man front that Tomlin mentioned in his press conference today that you know, with John Abraham on one side there and Bierman gets some looks. And I believe Ray Edwards was signed. So it's going to be a quality test, as Mike Tomlin put it today. And I think it'll be a real good measuring stick for the Steelers Saturday night at Heinz Field.
Yep, it should be. And Mike Tomlin had a brief presser today that you covered. Really, so far, Ike Taylor's the only guy who's been ruled out with the broken thumb. That's not unexpected. There are a bunch of guys who are possible or probable.
Yeah, only Ike Taylor's been ruled out, but he said Cortez Allen, Jericho Cotchery, Mario Harvey, Bryant McFadden, Emmanuel Sanders, and Jonathan Scott are all basically termed questionable. Now, Jonathan Scott, I find it hard to believe he would play this week. I mean, Tomlin went as far to say that Gilbert would start at left tackle if Scott can't go. So evidently Gilbert's been fine, been taking reps at practice. Emmanuel Sanders just has really started light field work. If he played, I would be surprised. I mean, it might be more. I just don't see that happening. Bryant McFadden gave an interview with the media yesterday, and he's hopeful to play. Of course, he said at the same time if he felt like it would, you know, he would be suffering a setback with that hamstring, he would be scratched as well. So I expect him to probably dress and run around prior to warmups to see if he can get loose. Cortez Allen, boy, if anybody needed some snaps in the game, it would be him. Of course, they're still next week against the Panthers. Next Thursday, he can play. I really would like to see him on the field just for my own interest to see where he's at, even if it's second or third, fourth team type player. Jericho Cotchery, his hamstring tightened up, you know, after he had played in his series last week against the Eagles. So I think he'd be another one that just depends on, you know, how he does in pregame warmups. And Mario Harvey, really haven't heard much about him, and at this point I don't think it matters if he plays or not. He's playing for a practice squad spot probably.
Yeah, no question. And I actually talked about this on Savernon Sports this morning when I was doing the show. Cortez Allen, I think, is a very interesting guy in this picture. And the reason I say that is we've talked about how without the OTAs, teams have less time to evaluate their own. And a lot of guys are still in everybody's camp. They're going to have to cut 10, I think, next week before getting down to the final cutdown day the following Saturday. And what they have with Cortez Allen is a guy who is, we've talked about one AA school, going to the Citadel, less reps, less developed program, more focus on things other than football. He's a guy the Steelers would be grooming longer term to potentially come in and play one of the corner positions. Because of the situation with Cortez and him not getting on the field, I'm now guessing, and you know, this is a straight guess. If he does not play Saturday, I'm thinking the Steelers probably will try to sneak him through onto the practice squad because he's a guy who's far away. He's not going to contribute this year. And I just wonder if another team would be willing over the course of, you know, these first couple of weeks with roster spots being so valuable and trying to evaluate so many of your own players in a different year, maybe a fourth round pick doesn't slide through to the practice squad. In this particular year with this particular guy and these set of circumstances, the Steelers' lack of depth at corner, the performance of Woods and some of the other young guys, I think there's a real chance Cortez Allen doesn't make the 53.
Yeah, I think you meant Donovan Warren.
Warren, right.
David, I have flip-flopped. You know, when I get into when the training camp starts, I do my roster projections, and I flip-flop all over the board. And I really, you know, more of I try to treat it as a coach's board and how it might look and all. And even last week, I think I had 8, which I even said, you know, basically an unthinkable amount of cornerbacks on the roster. I had 8 on there. Not that I think that it ends up that way. It's just hard making a decision on those others as I trim on down. And I've gone back and forth on Cortez Allen. At first I thought, well, maybe this guy would be a candidate for IR. But as Ed Bouchette pointed out in our last podcast, he doesn't think the injury is serious enough for Allen to go on IR. And I believe there are some grievances that can be filed, you know, if a player's injury is not deemed serious enough for the right. IR. Now, as far as the practice squad, it's another thing I've kind of debated with myself back and forth, flip-flopped, if you will. You know, this is a fourth-round pick that we're talking about here. And, you know, he was termed a project, sure. I accept that. It's not surprised with as you pointed out, missing OTAs and mini camps and all like that, that he's probably not in premier football shape, ready to play. But I'm not sure that you could risk a draft pick like this, most notably a corner, risk him to waivers on the practice squad. I just think that the position, it's not like you're talking about a 6th-round guard here or, you know, a 7th-round linebacker if they had taken one this year. I think where he was drafted alone tells me that they have interest in this kid long-term. And let's face it, after this season, Brian McFadden's not going to be back. William Gay's not going to be back. It's going to be turned over to a slew of the young secondary players. And I really think that Allen fits into that picture. So right now I am leaning to him making the 53-man roster out of, you know, just his draft stock alone. And right. That would mean, you know, do you keep 6 or do you keep 7? Cornerbacks, you know, and I think we've talked about Bryant McFadden. You know, I kind of threw that out there, and that rumbling's picked up steam that he might be, included in the final cut downs. But it's another thing I bounced back and forth to. I think if Bryant McFadden really was not in their plans, I think he would have already been a casualty right now, and I think they intend on holding on to him too. So, and I think that, and I'm going to show that in my next roster projection. So, if that's the case, if you keep 7, that means you're keeping both the rookies and Cresden Butler, who's having problems finding the field and showing us anything. Or does Cresden Butler perhaps become the odd man out and they try to stash to the practice squad?
Well, that's another good point, Cresden Butler. You and I had expectations that he would be a guy who might even see the field this year, and you know, he's going to have to do a lot here in the next 10 days to have that opportunity. But yes, he is very much a guy. Now, would teams have more interest in Cortez Allen over Cresden Butler? I have no idea. The thing that I'll come back to is people thought maybe the Steelers reached a little bit with Cortez Allen in the 4th round. So maybe on other teams' board, he was a 5th, 6th, 7th round pick. And that might be another reason he slides through. But we'll certainly wait and see how things go on Saturday. That's going to be, again, you know, we talked about it last week, and they performed, the corners performed admirably, all things considered. It'll be another big area of focus this week. One of the things that's come up since we last spoke, and it's, boy, Omar Khan and Kevin Colbert just keep pulling rabbits out of the hat. Lawrence Timmons extended 5 years or 6 years, depending if you want to count this year, the last year of his rookie deal, maybe restructured, has signed a contract, $50 million. This will keep Timmons with the Steelers through 2016, and now Mike Tomlin's first 2 picks Timmons and Woodley are in the fold long term.
Yeah, David, you know, the Timmons deal just goes to show, you know, how good Omar Khan is at doing what he does. It's being reported out there, I think, you know, by some sites, which is incorrect, like it's 27 or 28 million guaranteed, and that is incorrect. Basically, as you said, he signed through 2016. Now, he had a little bit of his final year of his contract was still owed to him. That was rolled into this one, and the deal now includes basically $18 million in total bonus money, okay? So $12 million of that bonus money is what they call guaranteed. He has $10 million of that is signing bonus, and $7 million of the $18 million is actual roster bonuses in 2012 and 2013. It's split up. It's not in half, but it's close. Now, that's, of course, not guaranteed money. So, you know, when you look at basically the guarantee amount being $12 million, that's your $10 million signing bonus, a $1 million base salary and a $1 million roster bonus this year. That's how you get your $12 million. So, in all, I think he's going to count just shy of $5.4 million against the cap this year. It'll jump up to 9.125 in 2012, and then kind of go from there. Another interesting thing with this deal is you can only amortize the signing bonus for 5 years, so that leaves the 6 year of this contract, which is basically voidable, if you will, because all it is like a, I want to say it's about an $8 million base salary with no signing bonus attached. So basically, if, you know, if he's done come 2016 or does not make the roster, he's an easy cut at that point with no dead cap issues. So,
right. No dead cap issues, but also maybe a little cheaper than he might be otherwise with another year of amortization.
That's exactly right. I mean, it basically, I guess you could say it's more of a club option on that. So,
yep.
You know, getting them, you know, we've debated back and forth who should go first, you know, and I've set the parameters out for it. Could either be Timmons or Polamalu. Personally, I might have done Polamalu first. I think you're dealing with apples and oranges here. I think Polamalu will get done at some point. I mean, either, you know, franchise next year and then a long-term deal before the season starts next year. I think Polamalu is probably a little bit miffed right now, and you can't blame him, but it is what it is, and I'm not ruling out them still getting a deal done with Polamalu, but it's highly unlikely at this point heading into the season with just, you know, a few weeks left to go.
I haven't seen anything about Troy being miffed. I certainly, in the things he has said in the media, he said, you know, he trusts the Steelers. They've dealt with him professionally, and, you know, he wants to remain a Steeler. I don't understand the perception that Troy's getting a bad deal. They made him the highest paid Steeler ever when they signed him to the contract in 2007. He's still under contract for this year. Lawrence Timmons has never had a payday. This is his big payday for the first one in his career. Troy's made big money. He's going to make big money this year. He's going to make big money next year. So, you know, I come down a little bit on the other side of this. I think the Steelers did the right thing. I don't think there's this any disrespect card or anything like that. The Steelers have proven that they pay their guys, and the guys are willing to stay in the fold. Some of them for a touch less maybe than they would get other places. But I think this is more of a contrived media thing than anything that anybody in the locker room is concerned about.
Yeah, and it might be a contrived blog thing too on my part because I wrote about it. But, you know, if you go back, and Troy says all the right things in the media, David, and the only thing that kind of caught my attention when they talked to him after the Timmons signing is his comment that they'll cross that bridge when they get to it, meaning if he's still not, you know, signed come the start of the season. So you can read into that however you want to. And, of course, bloggers and media, we love to do that because it creates, you know, talk on the other side of it. And once again, I am notorious for trying to make a few things out of nothing. And Troy might be just as fine with it. So we'll definitely know over the next few days because generally the Steelers do not deal with, you know, contracts during the regular season. It has happened before. It's been many, many years ago. But if you ever were to do something during the year with a player, Troy would be one that you would do it with.
Certainly would be. The other news that came out, and we talked about the fact that Trey Essex was in camp on Monday. Turns out Monday night he signs a contract this just raises red flags. It tells you a couple things. One, the left tackle situation is, I would say, maybe unstable is too strong a word. If Jonathan Scott is healthy, he's clearly the starter at left tackle. But Marcus Gilbert, it certainly didn't look ready to step in and take real-time snaps in an NFL game. And he's going to be, at the moment, potentially could be the backup left tackle if Tony Hill's is playing right guard like he's slated to do on Saturday night. So you have Trey Essex, the jack of all trades, kind of a guy who can play the guard positions, could play left tackle if necessary. He almost ate his way out of football, and the Steelers brought him back in. I guess he's lost a fair amount of weight since training camp started. And he signed a contract, and he's going to be a guy who I now think is going to make that 53-man roster. And it puts, as we've talked about before, it puts Chris Scott and Keith Williams on the big question mark list.
Yeah, and once again, this shows the Steelers, and you nailed it on the head saying that, you know, the concerns are there. I think maybe all along, maybe they were thinking about bringing Essex back, but the weight might have been the issue. Supposedly when they saw him at Ben's wedding, they basically told him, look, no deal until you show that you can lose some of this weight. And he reportedly lost two babies worth of weight. Now, I'm interested to see him up close and personal on Saturday night against the Falcons to see just how big of babies those were. Were those full-term babies or were those premature babies? But,
right.
But you know, this is a guy, too, that even though, you know, Tony Hills is going to make another start at right guard. Tomlin said today that spot is not nailed down. So, you know, if Essex has lost some weight, maybe he makes still a run at that right starting guard spot, because I mean, he was the opening day starter at right guard last year. Another thing with the flexibility that Essex gives you, he can play both tackle spots. He can play both guard spots. He was the emergency center in the Super Bowl to Doug Ligurski should something have happened there. And another thing that he did last year is he would line up as that extra tight end in some formations when they needed three tight ends due to the injuries at different times to Matt Spaeth and Heath Miller last year. So he's ultra versatile if he's back in a lot in good football shape. I like the signing. You know, I think he flew underneath the radar. I think all of us were thinking, okay, well, maybe Max Starks, maybe Flo Zell comes back. But from what I understand with the Essex contract as well, it's a one-year deal for the minimum. And I think they can take the discount on him being his years accrued. So I think you chop off about another $200,000 or $300,000 off of that base salary as what his actual cap charge is. So once again, Colbert and Omar Khan doing their job, picking up someone who knows their system, fills a need. I mean, the guy's the ultimate swing guard tackle if you need him, and I'm with you. He makes the 53-man roster.
Another area that the Steelers have recently talked about, and Bruce Arians has been quoted in the media, this doesn't surprise me at all, that David Johnson is the backup tight end. We've had some questions. You know, we've talked about his performance in the Ravens game last year was very good. Some questions maybe about his blocking ability at the tight end spot. You've brought that up. Maybe he's not big as you'd like and as physical as you would like the guy to be, maybe better situated to be in the fullback role. But the third tight end spot is wide open. And so who does that mean that we're talking about? We're talking about John Gilmore, the Penn State grad. We're talking about Wesley Saunders, the free agent, undrafted free agent from South Carolina. Who else is in the mix for that?
Unless it's that McCoy kid, Jamie.
From A&M, is that the?
Jamie McCoy, I think it is.
Yep.
You know, outside of that, I really can't see, you know, who they might be considering. Jamie McCoy is that Texas A&M kid, as you mentioned. He's looked okay. But, you know, one thing that you can kind of read into what Arian said is he likes that guy that's more of a tweener that can stick his hand in the dirt like a fullback, too, like David Johnson does. I don't think John Gilmore fits that mode, you know, that description there. Now, I still think unless, you know, McCoy really makes a leap here in this game, or Saunders too, but even Saunders is more built more like an inline or a regular tight end than he is in the David Johnson mold that kind of resembles a fullback, you know. So those would be the only guys I would see maybe, you know, vying for that third tight end spot. I thought Gilmore actually blocked pretty well last week. We'll see how he does this week. But you know, let's not rule out, too, with these final cutdowns coming, you know, just because one of these guys maybe make the 53-man roster, maybe there's a guy that's not going to make a roster out there that fits that type mold that they could bring in after the final roster cutdowns take place.
Yeah, that'll be something worth watching. And the other thing is he hinted at, and I don't want to read too much into this because we don't know how things will go, and I'm not sure that Bruce Arians is going to be the guy who makes the final decision. But he said the fourth, fifth, and sixth wide receiver spots were open. Obviously, the connotation there being that there will be six receivers. I've said all along that I think Arnaz Battle is not only competing with Tyler Grisham for that sixth spot, he's competing with the Morty Ivey and a couple of the defensive backs and whoever else may be involved for the 52nd and 53rd roster spot. But when he's talking about the fourth and fifth thing, I found that interesting, and I don't know that guys are competing for that spot. That's a question of whether Emmanuel Sanders is healthy and a full go, and maybe it's then the next battle, and the question would be, is it Jericho Cotchery or is it Antonio Brown, I guess. Did you see it the same way?
Well, I tell you, it was, you know, little things like that when you read through some quotes or hear someone like that talk to the media. That's one thing that I picked up that he specifically said, fourth, fifth, and sixth wide receiver. Now, I don't see how Emmanuel Sanders is battling for a roster spot. I don't see how Jericho Cotchery is battling for a roster spot. So that leaves it down to what you mentioned, Arnaz Battle and Tyler Grisham. I think Battle just provides, and this is a guy that I left off of my last 53-man roster projection to kind of accommodate the staggering eight cornerbacks on there, which I knew it wouldn't last long, but I wanted to take a look at it. I think Battle's your guy. This is a guy that you know knows the special teams role. He came over with Al Everest last year, you know, from San Francisco. I think he's done enough in the preseason. And let's face it, I mean, there won't be too many times, hopefully, where he has to hit the field as a wide receiver.
Let's hope it's zero.
Yeah, let's hope it's zero because something's really gone wrong,
right?
At that point. But I mean, he can do it if called upon. I think he can play all three, you know, positions in the offense. I think he just has much more upside special teams wise than a guy like Tyler Grisham does. So if they keep six, you know, and plus, let's face it too, we're still not convinced if Emmanuel Sanders is going to be ready week one against the Ravens, even though he says that's what he's shooting for. I'm still not convinced. So why not have a guy in there like Arnaz Battle, who he's going to wear a helmet every week. He can provide you that fifth receiver spot if Sanders is down, and he can also play on special teams.
Yep. Okay, Dave, I'm not sure what else is, you know, what are your thoughts on looking for? I know you're going to get something up on your blog tomorrow, but what are the thoughts of just approaching this game? We talked about at the beginning the starters playing a half. What are your general perspectives and what are you looking for?
Well, first and foremost, how Gilbert does at left tackle if he does indeed start. I think this will be a good test for him against John Abraham. I just hope he doesn't get Ben killed. You know, I think the leash will be short on him if he indeed does start instead of Scott at left tackle, which I believe he will. Tony Hills is the other question mark. I think that's quite obvious at the right guard spot there. How does he perform? He should get, barring injury like they had in the Eagles game, he should get quite a few snaps at the right guard spot. Trey Essex, I want to see how trim he is. I want to see where he's used at. I expect him to follow Gilbert into the game at left tackle and maybe even get some spots at the right guard to throw his hat in there. We mentioned Crezdon Butler. Donovan Warren is another one that's turned some heads. To see how they can contribute in this secondary to keep it up. Butler, I think, really needs to get on the field along with Cortez Allen. So they're quite obvious type things when you're going into a third preseason game, what you're looking for. You could throw Jason Worlds in there. Can he kind of duplicate the game that he had last week against the Eagles, which was not fantastic, but it was definitely serviceable. And, of course, you know, the overall health of the team coming out of this game. So they're quite obvious. I don't think I'm going to sneak up on anybody on this week's seven things to watch, but those will be some initial things that I'll have my eyes on.
All right. Fantastic. yeah, we'll see. Excuse me. We'll see Saturday night, 7:30. Again, this is the one to watch. If you're going to spend any time watching preseason football, this is the one, the first half of this game. I think you'll see, you know, if the Steelers are going to run a trick play, to put it into the craw of opposing teams. So they have to spend a little bit of time. Look for that this week. Maybe Antonio Brown throwing a pass. You'll probably see a gadget play in the first half somewhere along the way. The kicking game seems to be sound and set. Sean Swisham coming back from an appendectomy should be doing the kicking duties. We'll, assuming that goes fine, he and Sepulveda and Warren will be the three specialists on the team. And I think you've covered it. I think you've hit the highlights. We've talked all through camp about the cornerback position. There'll be some of these young guys at linebacker and some of the young guys at wide receiver in the second half who are really trying to make their mark and get to the practice squad. Those are guys who certainly wouldn't be picked up. Some of the undrafted free agents, though, if they will certainly clear waivers. So there are a lot of jobs at stake. Maybe, you know, the ones we focused on are the 53 jobs. But the eight practice squad jobs, the second half of that game, there'll be guys out there trying to at least get a paycheck and continue their NFL careers that for many of them are just starting.
Yeah, I agree. Now, quick question before we go to one of our we actually had somebody call into the hotline, one of our followers, Alan Gifford. But real quick, you know, let's talk about this 53 spot real quick. Would you rather have a ninth linebacker, which right now it looks like easily eight, but the Steelers have carried nine before. Would you rather have a ninth linebacker, a 10th offensive lineman, or a seventh cornerback right now as far as the 53-man roster goes if we were to discuss this 53rd man?
I guess if you're asking me, would I rather have Cortez Allen or Donovan Warren or Morty Ivey or Arnez Battle on the roster, I think I might take Morty Ivey, to be honest with you. I haven't watched enough tape on the special teams to just have a great sense of how good Arnez Battle is and how he differentiates himself from other guys on special teams. So I'm gonna give it a big caveat, but he's the guy who I think maybe from what I've heard, the reports I've gotten, the guy in camp who maybe if he can contribute on special teams, maybe a guy who has longer term value, maybe more so than any of the other three.
Would you keep him even before you would say Keith Williams or Chris Scott as a which, you know, let's face it, it looks like the Steelers are going to only carry nine offensive linemen, but they could very well carry 10 with that extra spot. Would you still keep Ivy over another offensive lineman?
Yeah, unless they think that Keith Williams has, you know, big potential going forward and for him it's a system thing, I would certainly consider that. But Chris Scott, from what we've seen, the buildup that he had coming into the preseason games and then his, you know, disappointing performance, I have no doubts that I really don't have any doubts that all these guys, except potentially, as we talked about, Cortez Allen, I have no doubts that almost all these guys are going to get to the practice squad. But yeah, I think I'd be, you know, if he's a special teams contributor, yeah, I'd be leaning that way.
Okay, interesting. And now to get to our question, and we'll play this right after we set it up, and then we'll give our thoughts on it here, is Alan basically was referring to the play, the Troy Polamalu interception last week against the Eagles, where Michael Vick came out of nowhere, of course, and I wouldn't say nowhere, but, I mean, he came up and really stuck Troy pretty good. I was just glad to see Troy get up. But, you know, he's pretty much asking about the rule here, as you'll hear, and on the other side of this, you know, I want to get your thoughts on the blocking of the quarterback, right. David.
Yeah, this is Alan. I was just wondering if they're going to make a rule that you can't block the quarterback during an interception. Why would they allow hits like Michael Vick put on Troy Polamalu last week if you cannot block him from it?
Yeah, I got to say, Dave, I'm actually just a touch confused exactly how the rule is phrased, what's going on, because to me, it makes no sense that if there's a turnover, an interception or a fumble, and the quarterback is not allowed to be blocked, he shouldn't be allowed to get in the play and make a tackle like Vic did on Troy Polamalu. I mean, that should be a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct. I certainly understand why they're doing this, and it's a quarterback-driven league, and these are the marquee guys, the big face guys of the league. They don't want them to get hurt, and we've seen time and time again, you see a turnover, and you see five guys on the defense just turn and look for the quarterback. I mean, they're going to maul them, and so there's a reason there is a good foundation to this type of penalty or this type of rule being put in place. I'm just not quite sure in structure how it works. I mean, literally, the quarterback should have to walk away from the play for this to make any sense. If he's allowed to get involved in the play, then it just makes absolutely no sense to me.
I think the key word is defenseless, and I tracked down, you know, some of the clarifications on this. You know, there's quite a few defenseless player categorizations, I guess, if you will. Defenseless has formally been defined basically, a player in the act of throwing a pass, a receiver attempting to catch a pass who has not clearly become a runner in the grasp whose forward progress has been stopped, a returner attempting to kick attempted to field a kick in the air, a player on the ground at the end of the play, kicker or punter during the kick or during the return. And the seventh one is a quarterback at any time after a change of possession. And number eight is a player who receives a blind side block when the blocker is moving towards his own end line and approaches the opponent from behind or from the side. And that's sort of like a peel back block. So I guess the seventh one there, a quarterback at any time after a change of possession. Now, I guess the key word there is defenseless. So if the guy is just, you know, maybe running I guess that's the key clarification there is if he's defenseless. Now, if Michael Vick's headed straight for the play, I guess, you know, our guys, you know, who basically become offensive blockers after a change of possession have to make a decision. Is this guy headed for the play and should I block him? And I'm with you. I think there's some gray area here. And basically you're giving the quarterback, if he so wants to do it, a chance to make a clean, you know, attempt of a tackle here.
Right. And so obviously I would assume for the teams this rule has been clarified to some degree, because I have no doubt in my mind that they didn't set up a rule where a guy like Michael Vick gets to take a clean run at Troy and they're not allowed to block him. So maybe defenseless means you can't, if he's, you know, look, you know, maybe it's kind of like the blindside hit that that Hines Ward put on Keith Rivers. You can't go clean this guy out when it's not really associated with the play.
Yeah, I guess if he's not attempting to be in the play, you know, so in the past, you've heard everybody say, you know, there's a turnover. Where's the quarterback at? You know, they want a free hit on him. So I think this might be open to interpretation to each time it happens, you know, but I just can't see them being able to let the quarterback have a free run at a guy after a change of possession. I could be wrong here, but I'm sure it'll present itself during the season. So we'll definitely see how they handle it going forward. And if anybody has better clarification to this than what we're throwing out there, by all means, send us an email to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com or call in on the hotline or hit me up on Twitter and send me a link or whatnot to what your clarification of this rule is. And we appreciate Alan testing out the hotline and calling in with the question there.
Yeah, Dave, why don't you throw out that number again to anybody? We're happy to use some of these. We get tweets and questions on Gmail and on Twitter. But if you want to throw it across the hotline, we'll put you on the air as we're getting this up to speed.
Yeah, it's 814-429-YINZ, Y-I-N-Z. Very easy to remember, very easy to call. And we look to try to get this going a little bit more during the once the season starts to add a little, you know, interaction more with all of our great listeners that we have and all. So we appreciate that as well. Also, make sure we need to promo a few things here towards the end. Is David Todd's on 970 ESPN doing a great job filling in for Stan Savern, who I understand came out of a surgery okay, and David's doing a great job there. I'll be a guest of his on Friday. At what time, David?
I think we'll have you on. I'm on from 10 to 12, and we'll have you on around 10 around 10:10, 10:15, most likely.
Yeah, please make sure to tune in, you know, the rest of this week to listen to him and give him your support on there. And you can follow David on Twitter at Hammer Speaks. You can follow his Pirates account at DT on Pirates. You can, of course, follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot as well. So we appreciate all the great feedback. People are asking all the time on Twitter, hey, when's the next podcast going to be up? And that really makes us feel good. And trust me, we effort these things as often as we can and as quick as we can, especially after games as well. So just because you don't see one maybe on a day where you think you might be looking for one, it'll probably be up the next day.
And we will come back at you Sunday or Monday after we've had a chance to watch the game Saturday night, take a look at the film, and give you our thoughts on where the Steelers stand going into their last preseason game. Not even a dress rehearsal, just kind of a formality against Carolina at 8 o'clock on Thursday. So that's going to wrap up Episode 10, Season 2 of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Thanks for listening.